Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we were just talking about Governor Cuomo's State of the State address. Did you know that he and Governor Murphy gave their speeches at exactly the same time, 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon? We streamed both of them live on our website, so you could choose or even listen in stereo to the State of New York and the State of New Jersey at the same time, even though that would make most normal people's heads explode. Here's an extended clip from Governor Murphy in which he lays out some of the stats about inequality in the state, 2-minute clip, and you'll hear these stats are similar to the nation as a whole, but they are shocking. We have edited out some applause. For time's sake, this starts with a birthday wish.
Today would have been the 90th birthday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. God bless him, man. Amen. His gospel of love and sharing common ground still inspires. Dr. King famously said, and I quote him, "We may have all come on different ships, but we're in the same boat now." Our wealth gap shows how far we have to go. According to great research done from the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice, the median net worth of the average white family in New Jersey stands at just over $270,000. For Latino families, it is $7,000. And for an African American family, on average, it is not even $6,000. And I did not drop zeros. 270 plus to 7,000 and something to 5,900. This is a startling statistic that we must address. But the struggles of poverty and income know no color. Look no further than the 2018 ALICE study. And ALICE is a great organization done by the United Way of Northern New Jersey. Asset limited, income constrained but employed is what ALICE stands for. More than one third of all New Jersey households, encompassing all ages and races in every county, still can't earn enough to afford basic needs. The fact that many of these households are headed by someone working full-time, including at more than one job, shows us the need for action.
Governor Murphy from his State of the State speech yesterday. We'll play more and get to some of the specific agenda items as we go. And we're very happy to have with us for this New Jersey's Lieutenant Governor, Sheila Oliver. As many of you know, she was previously the Assembly Speaker. Lieutenant Governor, thanks so much for some time today. Welcome back to WNYC.
Always a pleasure, Brian.
That wealth disparity is obviously a national problem as well as a New Jersey problem. How much can you fight it on the state level?
I think there are a number of interventions that we as a state government can do. One of the things that we also look at is that home ownership represents the basis and foundation of building wealth within a family. So one of the things we did very early on through one of our state agencies is that we created and expanded a first-time home buyers program, whereby we can provide up to $10,000 to a family for a home purchase. We're dealing with a number of financial institutions that are working with us to not look at FICO scores as the basis on which to approve mortgages. We are also looking at, as you know, getting to a $15 minimum wage in our state, as well as a number of other types of interventions, particularly expanding access to jobs in the new emerging innovation economy. We've created pre-apprenticeship programs to get people onto a career path, and the governor has established a free community college program for anyone who has a combined family income of $45,000 or less.
The governor in the speech talked about accomplishments from his first year in office and your first year in office along these lines. How much of year one was undoing things that you think Governor Christie did wrong?
You know, for 8 years in New Jersey, many of our state agencies and departments were just put on hold. Many things that could have happened through our various state agencies just did not. Many of our boards and commissions, which helped lay policy in our state, went without appointments. There are significant numbers of vacancies across commissions and agencies, and we've been diligent, you know, in staffing up and getting those things accomplished. There was absolutely no urban policy in the Christie administration, and Governor Murphy is very clear that the future of our state relies on the future of the large cities of our state. So we are working very closely with urban mayors in New Jersey.
What's an example of urban policy, since you used that term?
Well, for instance, let's look at the competition we all had for Amazon to come into our states. The governor worked very closely with Mayor Baraka and the folks from Amazon as they were making their decisions in examining ways in which the state support would be there for NORC, for instance, if NORC had been selected. That is one example that I would point to. You know that water infrastructure is something that the governor spoke to during his speech yesterday, and NORC, with an infrastructure that dates back to the time that President Lincoln was president of the country, many of the pipes are that old in the city of NORC. The governor's working very closely, and he convened a meeting with mayors across 22 municipalities that are dealing with lack of water infrastructure. So our State Department of Environmental Protection is working very closely with those communities through our Division of Local Government Services. We are helping those communities do bonding so that they have capital available to them to begin to fix the infrastructure. But we all know that we need the federal government to step up and do a national infrastructure program to address these issues.
Listeners, your chance to speak with New Jersey's Lieutenant Governor, Sheila Oliver. Did you listen to Governor Murphy's State of the State address yesterday, or how's the state of the state according to you? What would you like to see the Murphy administration and the legislature tackle in 2019? 212-433-WNYC. If you have a question for Sheila Oliver, 212-433-9692. Lieutenant Governor, you mentioned the efforts to win the Amazon deal for the Newark area. I was surprised by how much time the governor spent, and right near the top of the speech, talking about the system for giving tax breaks to companies to come and create jobs or to stay. So here's another clip from the speech. This is 1 minute in which he says what he believes actually attracts businesses.
Now, what attracts businesses and creates jobs is a skilled and agile workforce, working modern infrastructure, great public schools, cutting-edge research colleges and universities, innovative public-private partnerships, and an unmatched location, and a culture that encourages innovation and entrepreneurship. I've used the example of Massachusetts before, and it bears repeating. Nobody calls Massachusetts a low-tax state. But their economy over the past decade has run laps around us. How? It wasn't a single-minded reliance on tax incentives. In fact, the average Massachusetts award is nearly one-eighth of what it had been, what we had been giving out. In Massachusetts, it's only about $22,000. Per job. How did they do it? They did it by investing in education and in infrastructure and building connections between higher education and the real economy.
Governor Phil Murphy from his State of the State address yesterday. Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver is our guest. And Lieutenant Governor, that was really interesting hearing him compare New Jersey to Massachusetts in that specific a state-by-state way. Is there legislation that flows from that to make the Garden State more like the Bay State?
Well, absolutely. As you know, the governor created an innovation task force within the administration, which invested a great deal of time in looking at the future economy of our state. We all hear the terminology EDS and MEDS, educational institutions teaming up with healthcare facilities, bioresearch organizations, and R&D, and as he made reference to, entrepreneurship, startup businesses, attracting startup businesses. So without question, the governor is using Massachusetts because they've successfully done that.
The Star Ledger today, in response to the speech and the emphasis on the broken system of giving too many tax subsidies to too many businesses to create too few jobs, the Star Ledger calls for a moratorium on all new tax incentives until the system is fixed. Do you and the governor support that?
Absolutely do. And I'd like to say that the first thing the governor did last January was he placed a halt on moving forward with any tax incentives. And I think that Governor Murphy made it clear. Our administration believes in tax incentives, but those that are responsibly designed and that they are properly enforced. We think that tax incentives do play a role in smart economic development. But I think he was right at the beginning of his address to highlight the shortcomings that the audit report laid bare right at the top of the speech. You know, we were elected to create a New Jersey that works for everybody, and the audit showed how right now the system doesn't, and we can't defend the status quo. I was a member of the legislature. I was speaker when that legislation was created, and we know that there are good corporate actors in our state who play by the rules, and we want them to be here, and we want them to be part of our future. And they also deserve a new incentive system that fully embraces the good faith efforts. But we have to retool a tax incentive program that invests in communities and people and not just corporations. And that's what Governor Murphy put forward yesterday, along with all of the other initiatives, you know, like investments in education and infrastructure and, you know, supporting entrepreneurship. These are the things that businesses look for when they look at the opportunity to come into states. But we, you know, our Economic Development Authority under the Christie administration really failed New Jersey in that regard. And you do know that the governor has called for the attorney general to examine and investigate and audit and to hold those accountable that, you know, kind of did not play by the rules.
You said moratorium, but didn't your administration offer large tax incentives to Amazon to try to get them to come to Newark? We see how that has blown up as a big controversy after the fact in New York State, you know, where New York City got it, and there's such a backlash to the tax incentives they gave. Is there a lesson from New York for you, or could you have even potentially competed until, you know, and it's probably a fantasy world to think that there would be a kind of regional ceasefire. What did you do with Amazon, and is there a lesson from the backlash in New York?
Well, you know, in New Jersey, we are definitely in a different place than the state of New York and the city of New York. I often remind people that New York City's population is comparable to our state's entire population with 8 million people. But yes, we did offer, you know, a lucrative tax incentive package to Amazon, and this is the reason why. If Amazon had chosen Newark, Amazon would have created 50,000 jobs based in the city of Newark, which would have been a game changer for that community. You cited earlier in the speech that the governor addressed the issue of the wealth gap and what the average family income is for communities of color in our state. The creation of 50,000 jobs, even with the offer of tax incentives to Amazon, would have given a return tenfold in terms of our economy.
Anthony in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC with Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver. Hi, Anthony.
Good morning, Brian. Hi, good morning, Lieutenant Governor. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Anthony.
So my question has to do with the apartheid system of public schools that we have in the state of New Jersey. It is there's a court case that has been ruled on that is unconstitutional to continue the system that we currently have. The Abbott ruling in New Jersey has funneled millions of dollars into these districts that I happen to live in. I'm a New Brunswick resident, as a former Abbott district. New Brunswick spends roughly over $20,000 per head per student in the school district, and we get nothing for that money. It's not improving. It hasn't improved in the past 40 years since Abbott, or more than 40 years.
And Anthony, what's your question?
When will we end home rule in New Jersey and go to a county system in New Jersey?
Anthony, you know that is an issue that is under discussion in our state legislature. And there are leaders in our state legislature who have promoted the concept of regional school districts. You know that the governor appointed two former mayors, one a conservative Republican, one a liberal Democrat, and we refer to them as the shared services czars. They've been working with mayors and communities all across the state to push forth this ideology that for New Jersey to begin to address the issue of such disparities, the issue of regional schools has to be done. We have school districts in New Jersey that consist of 1,500 students. You are absolutely right to point out the, quote, apartheid system of education in our state. Much of that has to do with discriminatory and exclusionary housing policies. Our administration is focused in on that as well. But we are with you as it relates to the issue of desegregation of the school systems in New Jersey. You know, New York is dealing with that issue, and New York City as well. But we are on top of that issue. You know that a number of advocacy groups in our state, led by the New Jersey Institute of Social Justice, the Education Law Center, and others, have filed a lawsuit against the state as it relates to segregation in our school districts.
Let's take another call. Here's Stephanie, who says she's from the United Way of Northern New Jersey, who also wants to react to the clip of the governor drawing attention to the tremendous wealth disparity by race in the state. Hi, Stephanie. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So here at United Way of Northern New Jersey, we have done a report on how many households are struggling to afford a very basic household budget. And we found that 38% of households in New Jersey don't earn enough to cover those basic household costs. And we were thrilled to have Governor Murphy recognize that report and that surprising number as an indicator that we really need to do more in our state to help all families.
Do you have policy priorities along these lines, Stephanie?
Well, one of our first policy priorities is to recognize that the federal poverty level is woefully short of measuring financial hardship, and that we need better measures to address this. And part of what United Way does is convene a lot of our stakeholders, including the governor's office and members of both parties in the legislature, to focus on policy that really ensures economic benefits reach all families.
Stephanie, thank you very much. Lieutenant Governor, one of the strains of criticism that the governor's speech is getting is that he didn't address or address very much the fiscal challenges facing the state, that there does seem to be a long-term debt problem. And Tom Moran's column in the Star Ledger says Governor Christie, even if you disagreed with him, the way he wanted to reduce pensions for teachers and others, at least he laid something out there that acknowledged the problem, and he went around the state making his case. Murphy hasn't done that, the article says, and the debt crisis is going to come back to haunt. So what's your response to that?
Well, yesterday was the state of the state. In about 6 weeks, the governor will be doing a major budget speech. In February, you know, he will be presenting the legislature with our proposed budget for the next fiscal year. And everyone can be assured that the governor will focus on these issues in his budget speech. He is on top of and is well aware of the challenges fiscally that we are confronted with, the cost of pension and health care for our public sector workers and for municipal workers, county workers in the state. He is well aware of our revenue issues. We've got to expand our revenue base. That is why we are focused on economic development as an early initiative. But I think that Tom Moran and others can look forward to the governor focusing primary attention on these issues in the budget presentation speech in February.
James in Floral Park. You're on WNYC with Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver. Hi, James.
Hi, Brian. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Glad you're on.
And it's a pleasure to be speaking to you today, and it's a pleasure to be speaking with you, Lieutenant Governor.
Good to meet you.
My question is, we've seen in a lot of states that have legalized marijuana that we've seen it's primarily a cash-based business. Much of the wealth is in many cash-based businesses that are it's hard to invest in, and unfortunately that's due to the federal status of marijuana. But it's hard to invest back into communities, and we've seen that it lends itself to corruption. I was just wondering how the state of New Jersey plans on addressing that, to making sure that not only tax revenue, but wealth flows back into the communities that this legalization would serve.
You know that Governor Murphy had prioritized legalization in this first year. I think you are right to focus in on those issues, because those very issues are an outgrowth of why we have not yet enacted legislation. There are many civic leaders and corporate leaders and grassroots organizations and mayors who and state legislators, for that matter, who are not ready to sign on to legalization until those issues are addressed. There is something called the New Jersey Urban Mayors Association. The largest city, of course, Newark, Jersey City, and Camden, and some of the others, they are adamant that they do not support legalization unless people who live in some of the most distressed communities in this state have access to jobs and to ownership. I think that that is something that is a top priority for many legislators. We do not want to see the industry in New Jersey controlled solely by hedge fund investors and others. We want there to be access to business opportunity to everyone. And I think that those are the things that are kind of stymieing us getting a bill that everyone can agree on. And as I listen to the legislators from New York focus in on the issues of the social justice side of enacting legalization, we're concerned about that in New Jersey as well.
Why do you think it's been so difficult? People thought that the marijuana legalization would sail through last year. Murphy, as a Democrat with a Democratic legislature, still has a fair amount of friction with Democrats in the legislature on a number of things. Why hasn't there been an ability to get to yes on those issues regarding marijuana legalization that you just mentioned? They should be resolvable.
I think that the Assembly and Senate leadership are close to agreement. The issue of expungement, I think we're getting to a place where everyone can embrace what our policy would be. I also believe this issue of providing access to participation in the industry by everyone, the bill that will be presented for a vote will make certain that those issues are addressed as well. And I think that we will get there. I think that there has been hesitation to not, you know, no bill is ever perfect, and most legislatures have to come back and do amendment. But for us in New Jersey, we want to try to get it right the first time, or as close to possible as right, as the governor signs a bill. But I do believe we're almost there.
One more call. Joel in Fanwood. You're on WNYC with Lieutenant Governor Oliver. Hi, Joel.
Hi. Thank you very much, Brian. I'm really impressed by all the concerns that the previous callers have brought up. And I want to thank you, Lieutenant Governor, for bringing your legislative experience to the governor's staff. I really want to know, what can we do to help get the independent prosecutor bill, which is on the governor's desk? How can we get him to sign it?
You know, Joel, in the legislature, I was the prime sponsor of the independent prosecutor bill when I was in the assembly. I have worked with many of the faith-based leaders, particularly from your county, Union County, for a very long period of time. And we are hopeful that we will soon get an answer. I know that I am in touch with many of the advocates who've been working on this for a long time. The governor has until the end of this month to sign the independent prosecutor bill. I am respectful of the position that was put forth by the attorney general. You know that the attorney general came and testified before the Law and Public Safety Committee, and he is not so inclined to support the independent prosecutor.
And let me jump in on this just for a second to explain to the listeners who may not already be steeped in this issue that when the caller brings up an independent prosecutor bill, the first thing you're probably thinking about is something like Robert Mueller. But this is not about that. This is about when there's use of force by a police officer anywhere in New Jersey. Who investigates that use of force? Is it the local police department, or is it a special prosecutor under the supervision of the state attorney general? And the state attorney general is reluctant to take this on. That's what you were just saying, Lieutenant Governor, right?
He can do it right now. And I just want to clarify that with our issue in New Jersey, the bill is requesting a special prosecutor when a death results.
Okay.
At the hands of police.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, you look at the Eric Garner case, you look at Trayvon Martin, you look at the cases all across the country, and you know, we're concerned about that in New Jersey. But our prosecutor, under our Constitution and other laws, can statutorily go into any county in New Jersey and can take over a case now. And I think that is the concern of our attorney general, that we don't need a law to do that. He can do that right now, as he has, you know, focused attention right now. We've got an issue going on in Paterson, New Jersey. And you know, there's been a lot of demonstration, a lot of community outreach to our lieutenant governor and to our attorney general, and because we had someone who died within the past 2 weeks, and we don't know the elements of the case, and we don't know how it happened, and you can be certain that the attorney general is in constant communication daily with the Passaic County prosecutor to make sure that you know, an exhaustive investigation is undertaken. But I think the position of our AG is that he has the authority to do that now.
And I think in our last minute that one of the arguments of the reform advocates is that in a case like that, or where there's a death where a police officer is actually charged with a crime in that death, that that trial never take place in the same county as the incident. I guess the presumption is that local people are too biased in favor of the police officer. Do you support that provision?
Yes. You know, as I said, I was a sponsor of this legislation, and, you know, it is felt by the legislators who are sponsoring this bill and those that are supporting it that prosecutors and local police departments and county sheriff departments, you know, they interact with one another. Often you will see someone work for a local police department who subsequently goes and works in the prosecutor's office, and people are concerned about incestuous relationships between those agencies.
Lieutenant Governor Sheila Oliver, thank you so much for spending so much time with us today on the day after Governor Murphy's State of the State Address. We look forward to speaking to you through the year if we have the opportunity to do that. So thank you very, very much for coming on and for taking some calls from around the state.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Take care.